From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Tara Hills Benoll.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daly City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Edge of the Mission.
The Yorktown. Antioch.
Nopa, San Francisco.
Coming up, resettling in the U.S. after the long journey from Central America.
Just imagine what it would be like if we transplanted ourselves in another culture where we had to deal with housing, we had to learn a language, we had to figure out how to feed ourselves.
A longtime community organizer speaks about the dangerous trip.
It's a very difficult experience for anybody to migrate. They are not doing it because they want to explore.
And learning to live with the after effects of migration.
And the stress level is so high that by the time we get them here, they have diabetes.
Starting over, today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Since 1989, San Francisco has been a sanctuary city, a place that offers undocumented migrants a chance to start a new life without the threat of immediately being turned over to immigration officials. The city's Mission District has long been a sanctuary for Latino immigrants, with or without papers. Thousands from Central American countries like Guatemala and El Salvador have made the neighborhood home after fleeing civil wars and violence beginning in the 1980s. And the Mission is still a magnet for Latino migrants. But with San Francisco topping national expensive rent lists, it's tougher than it used to be to make a fresh start here. KALW's Lila Day tells us more.
Concepcion Caballero Antonio is chopping squash in the kitchen of Los Yaquis Salvadorian and Mexican restaurant. The massive knife she's using is about the same size as her arm. She's very small and grins a lot. She's happy about her job as a cook and dishwasher. Concepcion points out the fish she'll be frying later today.
Vamos a preparar los siete mares. Mariscos.
Concepcion makes $248 working 20 hours a week. She came to San Francisco from El Salvador in 2013. She tries to keep her spirits lifted, but there's a heavy sadness that lingers.
Hubo una matanza en mi país. Mataron a mi compañero de vida. Y dejaron baleado a un hijo que tenía de crianza.
There was a massacre in her country, she tells me. The love of her life was killed. Concepcion had been a vendor selling goods in a market. She lived in the same town with her three daughters and six grandchildren, and they mean everything to her. But after her life partner was killed, she knew she wasn't safe in El Salvador. She said she'd made eye contact with a gang member fleeing the scene of a murder.
They iban a matar porque yo era la única que había visto.
She says they would have killed her because she was the only one who had seen this. Concepcion grew up during the civil war in El Salvador that started in the 80s, but the violence hasn't really stopped. The country's overrun by gangs and considered one of the most violent countries in the world, about a murder every hour. Concepcion says she had to run. With the dollar in her pocket, she headed toward Mexico. She begged for rides in the backs of trucks and for money. She traveled by foot, by car, and train. Finally, she got to the border near McAllen, Texas. She says when she arrived, she was in a really dark place mentally. She didn't know what to do. She says she walked and crossed the Rio Grande, and then they caught her. She stayed in a Texas jail for 3 months. Then she made it here to San Francisco. Within a few months, Concepcion's oldest daughter also arrived in the U.S.
My name is Claudia Martinez.
Claudia originally landed in Las Vegas. When things didn't work out there, she joined her mom in San Francisco. They moved in with roommates.
It's a lot, because when we first came to San Francisco, we paid $500 between the two of us. And there was five in the same room. Yes, five people, and it was smaller than this.
Eventually, mother and daughter decided to move out, so they didn't have to live with so many people. And for Claudia, that meant leaving the Mission for the Excelsior, which is one of the neighborhoods that's seen an increase in Latinos. Some analysts believe that families splitting up and moving into separate housing is why overcrowding in units is actually lower these days. Claudia now lives in a one-bedroom that she shares with another couple. She says living in San Francisco isn't cheap, But there's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, sí, es poco caro, pero
it's a little expensive, but there's a lot of work. You just need someone to give you a hand to help you get work.
Although it's possible to find work without papers, Concepcion and her daughter don't have any credit background. That's something that's required by most landlords when it comes to signing a lease. So, while Claudia has less roommates in her new place, she's paying $250 to share a very tiny bedroom with two other people. Concepcion also shares a room in a very small apartment, where boxes are stacked in every corner. On the lower bunk is her Guatemalan roommate, Orlando Fernandez Cruz. He's stretched out with a neck brace on.
I was riding my bike on 13th and Van Ness, and a car hit me. I was unconscious, and then I woke up in the hospital.
Cruz has documents that allow him to work. He's been employed at a car wash for the last 7 years, but he can't work right now. He's used up all of his sick and vacation days since he's been injured. He wasn't fired, but he's not getting paid. He says although it isn't easy living here, he's had a lot of support.
My dream was to come to the United States, and I had a friend here who helped me out. I struggled and struggled. He was a good friend to me, though. When I came here, he welcomed me and found me work.
Cruz says this network of support made him want to stay in San Francisco. Now that he's out of work, friends have been chipping in to help pay rent. When he first arrived 8 years ago, it was much cheaper.
When I first got here, a room like this would be $400
or $500.
He and Concepcion now share this room for $800 a month.
Pero. Hello?
It's one of Concepcion's daughters calling from El Salvador. I appreciate you, her daughter says on the other line. Always supporting us, being mother, father, friend, and being a beautiful mom, a marvelous mom.
Sí, hija. Gracias. La quiero mucho.
Concepcion tells her daughter she loves her.
Gracias, hija. Va, pues saludes y cuídense y besos y abrazos. Bye.
When I'm about to leave, Concepcion grabs my arm and asks if I know of a less expensive room she could rent. Something nearby because she wants to be close to work and her local clinic. I tell her I don't know of a place. Concepcion nods, hands me a piece of chocolate, and gives me a kiss on the cheek. Que Dios te bendiga, she smiles. God bless you.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And the piece you just heard was produced by Leela Day, who you'll hear more from now in conversation with Belinda Reyes. She's director of the Cesar E. Chavez Institute at San Francisco State University. The organization researches the impact of social oppression on communities of color. It's one of many offering assistance to Latino communities.
What are the chances of someone being able to apply and receive asylum?
It's a very difficult experience for anybody to migrate. They are not doing it because they want to explore. It is really need what causes them to move, or a desire to change, or an oppressive environment, or and particularly where she's coming from. People are escaping. They have a case for asylum, but we are not thinking about them as refugees. We're thinking about case by case, and everybody has to prove their case. There's not even a temporary protected status anymore. I mean, even though we know that the problem is people escaping crime and difficulties, we still try to think about them as economic migrants. Others that have confronted the same crime, the same war, but because he was, a protected government, maybe by the United States, they never became refugees.
So that's the one thing that could determine if they're a refugee or
it's really, immigrant. Yeah, whether they fear for their life. And But the refugee decision that then anybody from that particular population qualifies for, like the Syrians right now, then sets up a different process. Then everybody within that category of people qualifies. That what we do with Central Americans and Haitians and others is no, we don't qualify. They are not refugees, even though the situation is very similar. We analyze case by case asylum cases. So is this person have enough proof to show that they have been persecuted and they fear for their life? And sometimes it's very hard to have that evidence. It's your word against the person that is asking you the questions.
You've worked a lot around immigration policy. What are some of the main things you think that that the public should be noticing and focusing right now when it comes to immigration reform?
Yeah. We think of militarizing and a response that is to arm Mexico, to arm Cuba, to arm Colombia. And often that gets used to oppress in many of these countries. And it creates more havoc than it is. So I think also moving away from that idea of militarizing to perhaps programs that address issues of poverty and address other issues, not just give a bunch of weapons to a new government that is oppressive, to address issues of drugs. And it's an issue of poverty, it's an issue of opportunity. So building infrastructure in El Salvador, addressing issues of poverty in El Salvador probably will have a much better consequence than, again, a military approach of bringing more soldiers to address the issue of drugs.
One thing that we just heard in the story about Concepcion was her very, very difficult journey through Mexico, but partly because of the way she was treated because she's from El Salvador.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about this experience that she had where she felt mistreated?
Yeah. It's very, very rough and very difficult. But I think there is, I just came back from Puerto Rico, that's where I'm from. And in Puerto Rico is the Dominican, the one that is the immigrant and the one that is talked about as they are bringing the crime, they're doing all the bad things. You hear Trump talking about it's the Mexicans in here. In the Dominican Republic, it's the Haitians. Now there is always that battle reception to the other, who often looks very similar to us.
So in the story about Concepcion, is she considered the other being from El Salvador in Mexico?
Yeah, definitely. And even within the Latino community in the United States, there are some differences and the way the community speaks of each other, of the different subgroups, the Mexicanos and the Salvadorians. But at the end, the migration experience in here unites these very different countries and peoples. But they do go through very difficult times. When we were doing our study about borders was over 10 years ago, and people that, they're not the poorest of the poor, but they have some basic resources, but they cannot afford $4,000 for a trip. That was what they were paying 10, 12 years ago. It's much more money right now. And people are actually owing the money, so they might pay part of it. But once they're delivered, they continue to pay. They're even charged interest for this. So once people are in here, particularly the undocumented immigrant is what I'm talking about, once they're in here, they not only have to send money home and be able to buy the groceries and pay the rent, they have to pay for what it cost them, that it could have been $10,000 with interest to be able to remain in here, the travel cost.
And what about people that make it here without paying that? Are they put in worse situations when they don't have someone that they're paying to help them get here?
It's very difficult to do it on your own. I think you pretty much have to hire a coyote or a smuggler to come, and the prices are outrageous. So you either pay it ahead of time, and if you have somebody in your family that could do that, or you owe that amount of money, and then you have to continue to pay. So you are kind of like, it's indentured servitude sometimes. They get in situations that they have to work for the person that brought them in here. And, in some conditions of slavery sometimes on some of the people that are getting in here. And again, many of them are escaping situations that force them to leave. And they face really difficult situations once they get here.
That was Belinda Reyes, director of the Cesar E. Chavez Institute at San Francisco State, speaking with KALW's Lila Day. Lila also brings us this next story, where we'll hear more from Concepcion Caballero Antonio, who we met earlier in the show. Making the journey to cross the border can be a life or death decision. Temperatures in the desert can reach the triple digits, and many migrants die of dehydration or exposure along the way. Despite these dangers, 2014 was the second highest year on record for Central American child and family migration to the U.S. But once people manage to get across the border, there are still threats to their well-being. When Concepcion left her family back in El Salvador, her health wasn't something she worried about. That is, until she arrived here in the U.S. Here's Lila Day again to tell us more.
Yo no me quedo, me voy a ir con él. Yo no me quedo, me voy a ir con él. Para la nueva Jerusalén.
Concepcion Caballero Antonio is listening to one of her compañeras sing at the Mission Neighborhood Health Center while sitting at a table full of bright tissue paper.
Color zapote, naranja y rosado.
Zapote, orange, pink, she says, pointing out the tissue paper she's using to make flower decorations. Today she's with a group of about 10 other men and women. They come here every Wednesday to do projects like this one and to learn about nutrition.
Dulce, Irán.
Coming here is very important to her.
La paso solo llorando. Mucha tristeza, pensando cosas.
She says if she wasn't here, she'd just be crying, a lot of sadness, thinking about things, because the change hasn't been easy. The change she's talking about is having type 2 diabetes. She's 43 and otherwise healthy. It wasn't something she had in El Salvador. But shortly after she arrived, she started having symptoms and was diagnosed here at the clinic. Although it's been 3 years since then, it's still hard.
Cuando la gente me pregunta, yo nunca, nunca digo de mi enfermedad.
¿Por qué?
Me da pena, siento miedo que la gente no se acerque, no sea amiga.
She says she doesn't tell people about her illness. She's embarrassed, afraid people won't want to be around her. When she was diagnosed, she thought it might be a death sentence.
En mi país, si yo me hubiera dado cuenta de esto.
Concepcion says back in El Salvador, she knew diabetics who had their feet amputated. It's a disease that is seen often in Latino populations. The U.S. Office of Minority Health reported that Hispanics are almost twice as likely to be diagnosed with diabetes when compared to non-Hispanic whites. And research shows that diabetes is directly linked to socioeconomic conditions. Mental stress raises the blood glucose levels. And migration is stressful, according to Dr. Ricardo Alvarez, the medical director at the Mission Neighborhood Health Center.
Imagine what it would be like if we transplanted ourselves in another culture where we had to deal with housing, we had to learn a language, we had to figure out how to feed ourselves, we had to figure out that migration pattern, and we had to do it with minimal or no supports.
Dr. Alvarez says these stresses can affect hormone levels, like insulin regulation, which is the main problem in diabetes, and it can lead to larger problems.
It's going to affect your nerves, neuropathy, your eyes, retinopathy, your heart. It's going to affect every organ system of your body.
Alvarez says the center has seen a decline in Latino clients. As the neighborhood has changed, the Latino population in the mission is down 50% since the year 2000. But that's still mainly who the clinic serves, with healthcare and through these workshops.
And it's, look how much fun I'm having. I am having a blast. They're loving it.
That's Iran Pont. She's a chronic care coordinator and dietitian who leads the weekly workshops here. She says some of her clients are arriving in need of major support.
Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, very poor countries, and they come here to escape from poverty and sometimes death.
Ponce says over the years, she's seen the direct link between migration and diabetes.
And the stress level is so high that by the time we get them here, they have diabetes.
Concepcion says she tries not to get too stressed out. She goes to Zumba class often, which makes her feel better. But her finances are troubling. Bills are adding up now. Her first year of services at the clinic were free, but now she's paying $50 a month for doctor's visits and another $50 to see a psychologist. Right now, her biggest worry is whether she can afford the $500 it'll cost to fix an ingrown toenail. Coming here helps her not to dwell on it.
Sí, me relaja mucho. Me ayuda a olvidar muchas cosas.
She says it relaxes her. It helps her forget about a lot of things. But sometimes it helps her remember some of the good things, like when a compañera at the clinic bursts into a song, one that Concepcion joins in on. She remembers it very well from El Salvador. For Cross Currents, I'm Lila Day.
For more information about the Mission Neighborhood Health Clinic, go to kalw.org and click on Cross Currents. Today, we've heard from people making a new life in the U.S. Now we'd love to hear from you. Email us with your comments and suggestions at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Geraldine Asu, Lila Day, Audrey Dilling, Tammy Drummond, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, James Rowlands, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Liz Mack. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll hear the lengths people will go to get rid of a particular pest.
Beer, gasoline, and put out in the hot sun.
Kerosene. We've heard it all. Lysol. Listerine.
Yes, Listerine. Anise.
Coconut oil.
Vinegar.
Olive oil.
Anything juice. That's in your kitchen cabinet, I guess. Yeah.
They've tried. Dealing with lice. Tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's local music is by San Francisco band Older Son. Older Son tops the bill on Thursday night at the Hemlock Tavern in San Francisco. Music starts at 8:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.